This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the morning run, and thanks for staying with us. I'm Julian Ng, and joined by Lynn Mark and Sharitz Abdullah. Now, Israel is going to have an election soon, and its Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has pledged to annex Jewish settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories if he wins his country's elections later today. And I think this is going to polarize not only people in Israel, but globally as well.
It is. Now, this is seen as quite a dramatic last-minute rallying call to his nationalist base, right? So in interviews with domestic media ahead of the polls, Netanyahu repeated the promise and said he would prevent the establishment of a Palestinian state by, in quotes, controlling the entire area. It is quite a departure, actually, for Netanyahu. He's been the prime minister since the 70s, and he's actually been one of only two members of his party to never come out in support of annexing the West Bank. So this is, it seems like, quite the dramatic last-ditch attempt for him.
Yeah, so at the same time, in Israel's last election, 2015, Netanyahu was also criticized for making statements, seen as incendiary and racist basically to rally the right-wing supporters. So what he does is, this is to warn the Arab citizen in Israel that we're heading to the polling station in droves. Without certain victory in sight this year, many had been waiting for a similar rhetoric. And there's also the growing settlement construction by Israel, which basically dash hopes for the so-called two-state solution, which, envisions an Israel and also Palestinian being side by side, and which has always been the preferred peace option for most of us in the international community.
So throw in Donald Trump into the mix, and you have this recipe for further polarization. Donald Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital early in his term as president has damaged this two-state ideal. Also, Palestinians see the occupied eastern section of Jerusalem as the capital of any future state and cut contact with Washington after the declaration.
Yeah, so now Netanyahu is facing a tight race for re-election. So recent polls have shown that his right-wing Likud party, they've fallen behind the Blue and White Party, which is run by a former Israeli army chief, Benny Gantz. Now, however, with support from smaller ultra-nationalist parties, Netanyahu could still have a strong chance of forming a coalition government.
Now, we spoke to James Dorsey earlier, his senior fellow at the Singapore's S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies, as well as its Middle East Institute, and we asked him how serious Netanyahu's pledge is to annex Jewish settlements and whether this is chalking it up for election rhetoric.
Well, I think that there always was a question in Netanyahu's mind about the status of Jewish settlements on the West Bank in any future peace agreement. And he has, on a number of occasions, said that they would not be returned to Palestinian sovereignty should there be a two-state solution. I think what we've seen more recently is that Netanyahu has filled out his concept of what he thinks, what he sees as a Jewish state or a state for the Jewish people, which does not give equal rights to Israelis or Israeli Palestinians, that is, Palestinians who have Israeli citizenship, and offers, in effect, very little prospect to Palestinians in territories that Israel occupied in 1967.
Now, we also asked James if we could see change in Israelis' policy if Netanyahu fails to be reelected.
Well, I think that what you have seen is, and Netanyahu is a reflection of that, a shift of Israel in general to the right. That is not to say that there is not a considerable body of the Israeli public that would not entertain a two-state solution. Mm. The problem, of course, is that at this point, there is, in effect, little encouragement from the United States to move towards a two-state solution. If anything, you've seen Donald Trump embolden Netanyahu. And on the other hand, have a divided Palestinian entity, divided between President Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah on the West Bank and the Hamas government in Gaza, which makes progress towards any kind of settlement more difficult. I think in the bottom line, what this does is it it enhances the prospects of a one-state solution. And in my mind, a one-state solution would only work if all its citizens would have equal rights, which would mean that Israel would no longer be a Jewish state. And that, of course, is as much a threat to Israel as Netanyahu perceives a Palestinian state to be.
Now, the Middle Eastern countries have been somewhat muted in their response to the situation. For example, Middle Eastern U.S. envoys have so far declined to table a resolution protesting U.S. support for Iran over their annexation of Golan Heights. So we asked James for his thoughts on this.
Well, I think there are several reasons. One is, and you've got to look at different parts of the international community. Obviously, one knows that if one tables a resolution that denounces the annexation of the Golan Heights and the U.S. recognition of that, it's going to be vetoed. So the only real advantage of that is to make a statement. And I'm not sure that making a statement would contribute. I think more importantly, what you're seeing, and the question is going to be how this plays out, that you have a number of Arab states who obviously have some degree of common interest with Israel when it comes to Iran, for example, possibly Turkey, who have been willing to be more accommodating towards Israel. And in fact, you recently had both officials of the United Arab Emirates and of Oman effectively saying the policy of boycotting Israel has failed. The way to get results is to engage Israel. Now, that may become more difficult if you get an annexation of at least parts of the West Bank, and if that were to create turmoil in Palestine and Israel.
And that was James Dorsey, senior fellow with the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and its Middle East Institute in Singapore, talking to us about Benjamin Netanyahu's annexation proposal as part of his populist election strategy. And we move on to a less ominous election promise, and that's in India. Prime Minister Narendra Modi, his ruling BJP party, launched a manifesto yesterday promising $1.4 trillion on infrastructure, trying to match its main rival, the Congress party's populist promises.
Yes, so other of the BJP manifesto's promises include bringing poverty down into the single digits within 5 years and then eliminating it, doubling farmers' income by 2022, improving GDP share from manufacturing, and doubling exports. Now, it would also scrap Article 370 of the Indian Constitution, which grants special concessions to the disputed state of Kashmir. Now, it's interesting seeing the BJP manifesto, because originally when the opposition party came out with their manifesto, the BJP criticized them for the lack of clarity. But now the BJP has done the very same thing. So the manifesto has very few details on where exactly this extra money is going to come from.
Yeah, so now it's probably good to also look at the opposition. I mean, the other party, which is Rahul Gandhi's Congress party. Now, they have promised universal basic income, where the BJP has basically stated that it is going to be unaffordable. Through the Congress party, it says that it would fulfill the funds currently being spent on food subsidies, other programs geared towards the poor, which doesn't necessarily reach them. Now, it's good to look into India. Basically, their economy in totality, where they've seen rapid economic growth over the past few years. But nevertheless, they are still home to about one in three of the world's most extreme poor, with millions more teetering, you know, over the poverty line.
That's right. Also, the farmers are a very fertile vote bank, 263 million of them. Sorry about the pun. No pun intended. So they make up about 30% of the eligible voters. BJP has said that it would invest about one and a half trillion ringgit equivalent in rural development and offer farmers about 350 ringgit per year in income support. And that's the kind of populist policy that could lead to disappointment if you can't fulfill them, right?
Yeah, so the Congress Party also said that they were going to write off farm loans in the country. The other interesting thing here is also the job situation. So the Congress Party has promised to create jobs, but of course that's something that Narendra Modi has come under flak for, because he made the promise in 2014 that he would create 10 million jobs each year, and obviously he hasn't managed to do that. So I guess it raises the question of really how realistic are some of these election promises.
Okay, we'll be back with some local discussions. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.